Man, lately I just, I don't know what's going on. So much to do. Hang on. All right. Hey, this is Doc Mike, and this is Right on the Left Coast, a new show that we're doing here on the Ravenwood Homestead. And holy cow, what a day it is today. It's like, oh, thank you. I did, sort of. okay. I'm on. Everybody's listening. Sorry. I was outside enjoying this beautiful freaking snowfall that we're having. Gigantic snowflakes. And it has just been coming down steady and very heavy snow. Like, we've got an inch and a half in the last, I bet, hour. Like hour, I think an hour ago, I started kind of screwing around thinking I was going to do a show. And, man, it has just been coming down. Now, we got snow overnight last night. We totally expected this storm. And the only thing is, this is kind of funny. So, you know how we have these climate alarmists and who's, you know, they always talk about how, you know, how the world's going to end, all the glaciers are going to melt. I'm going to tell you kind of a funny story in just a second, too. Two very contrasting ideas of what the hell is going on in the world. But wait, I got to make sure everything's going and that I'm recording. Yeah, we're doing it. Okay. So this, all the local weathermen, they've been like hemming and hawing about this storm. Like, are we going to get a trace of snow? Or are we going to get any snow? All the way up to 15 inches of snow. Seriously. So you go from 0 to 15. And you have no, I mean, they have no idea how much is going to come in the next 12 hours, really. Maybe 24. But it's just going to be an overnight thing. And, you know, it'll be over with. It'll be freezing in the morning. It'll take a while for it to melt off, and then, you know, back to normal. So, normal for Oregon. I see the rest of the country is just getting hammered, or a lot of the country. This is a giant trough of cold air that has sunk down over the United States and creating just a huge amount of crap, like snow, ice, accidents, wind. Minneapolis, I saw today, is just getting hammered. So, but the funny thing is, so these weather predictors, you know, they don't even know how much, they don't even know what, literally the storm that is here right now, they have no idea what it's going to do. Okay. But yet they want us to believe that they could predict the weather in 10, 15, 30 years or 100. It's ridiculous. And I really hope that, I say this so much, but I really do hope that people are waking up to the reality of life. You know, there is no climate alarm going off. The only, there's a commercial here on a radio station I listen to. Yeah, I'm still old school, listen to radio. And they always say, this one commercial is probably the number one issue in our lifetime is the climate. And I think, well, yeah, of course it is, because you make it that. Like, if you would just shut up about it, it wouldn't be an issue. Seriously. Like, you know, if you, like, also those of us who listen, if we just, like, turned it off, didn't listen, it's not an issue. I've said many times about the trips I've taken to the coast here in Oregon. Over my entire lifetime, I mean, since I was 13, I lived in Oregon. I was actually born in Oregon. Then my family moved to California, you know, when I was a baby. And we came back when I was 13. And, but, you know, I loved going to the coast. I've always loved the coast. So I'd go to the coast. All the places I go to the coast, I mean, yeah, they look a little different, but the water still comes to the same high tide and goes out to the same low tide. There's no drastic difference. I still visit the same tide pools that I visited when I was very young. So, I, you know, for the climate alarmists to tell us that, you know, that we're in crisis is just ridiculous. And the sad thing is that the people that fall for it are the people who are probably going to be hurt the most. The ones who are promoting the whole thing, they know it's all BS, so they're not worried about it, but they want you to be worried about it, and they want you to make sacrifices. And if you're not going to do it voluntarily, then they're just going to force you to do it. Man, I was listening to some stuff about, well, let's say food security. It's kind of one of the topics of the day today. And I'm going to kind of talk about a little bit about the hydroponic unit. Man, that thing, I mean, so far, like 1 week, okay, I can't really judge the whole, oh, thank you. I love the Oregon coast too. It is beautiful. I can't really judge the success of this hydroponic unit on 1 week, but I got to tell you something. We put 72 seedlings in there. So probably one to one and a half inch tall seedlings in the hydroponic unit. We put 72 of them in there. Six of them apparently didn't have enough root structure, or we didn't get the root down in the liquid or whatever. Six of them didn't make it, but 66 of them are looking good. And I do have video of that, and it is actually already up on BitChute. So if you want to head over there and have a look, or maybe I'll attach it to the end of this video when I post this video, just so you can have a look. I also have a short video of Pebbles, my Bengal cat, out in the snow. And, I don't let her out a lot because she was like really expensive. But I've been letting her out more because she really does, like, she likes outside okay, like, enough, but really she likes to be inside hanging out with me. So I let her out in the snow, and I called the video snow leopards spotted in Oregon, which is kind of a joke, but they do kind of look like snow leopards, these Bengal cats. And I wanted to get a picture of her in the snow. Now, I wished I would have waited till tomorrow, because now we have a ton of snow. And we just had a little bit this morning, but man, oh man, it has gotten more and more. I've just been piling up here, like I said, in the last hour. Okay, where was I? I was thinking about something. Oh, food security. So, no, I was talking about the environment first. Let's cover this, because I got to tell you, the stupidest dichotomy of stories I heard today, well, yesterday and today, but they were presented one after the other on an actual newscast, which just goes to show you that these people, they read the news, but they have no idea what they're actually saying. Because I have to believe that some of these people they've got to have some brains. They actually went to school and they got degrees in journalism. And I'm not going to say whether, you know, journalism is a hard degree or an easy. It doesn't matter. If you went to school and you did the work, you have a degree, you're not an idiot, right? But here's the problem. So the first story they talked about in this two stories, one after the other, the first story was how sea ice is melting much faster than predicted, and that it was going to cause problems because the sea ice is melting. And of course, never in the history of the world has sea ice melted before. It's never happened ever in the history of the world. Like, only sea ice in the history of the world has only grown. It has never melted, okay? So that's why it's a climate crisis, is because the sea ice is melting. Now, we all know that's BS. We all know that there were times that we've gone through ice ages and then, you know, more tropical weather periods where the earth heated up. And yeah, a hell of a lot of the ice melted. Do we have geological records of the sea ice melting so much that it actually flooded the coastlands? Like, do we have populations of humans or other animals in the far distant past during any of those times when the earth had heated up and, you know, backed off the ice from an ice age? I mean, is there any records of animals disappearing? I mean, maybe there is on some local level, but you won't find it on a grand scale like it was the end of the world, or we all wouldn't be here. Okay. So then the very next story that they talk about is how the canals in Venice have so little water. And my mind immediately went to, now wait a minute, I think the canals in Venice actually depend on the tides. And sure enough, the water in the canals in Venice, Italy, depend on the tides, the ocean tides. So if the sea ice had melted at such a drastic rate that supposedly, you know, the ocean would be rising, I don't think Venice would be having a problem with their water level in their canals. Now, maybe I'm missing something because I didn't look into it that far. I mean, just on the kind of a redneck, regular guy just thinking about stuff, I'm like, wait a minute. If you had so much sea ice melt, why immediately, like, number one, whoever wrote the damn story should have put a little space between them, because everybody's damn attention span is so short that we don't connect those things so much or so easily anymore. But here they literally put one directly after the other. And I mean, they had to be thinking themselves, like, wait a minute, one of these stories just can't be right. Either the sea ice isn't melting at a much more drastic rate than we predicted, or Venice isn't really having that much problems with their canal levels. It can't both be true. Kind of like these like unusual freezing events going on in Texas. I mean, how do you logically explain that with global warming? And I mean logically explain that with global warming. Oh, I just noticed a problem with my... I don't care. You know, I'm fixing things a little bit at a time here in the studio, kind of trying some things out. And I'm kind of monitoring more often what I'm doing. Matter of fact, let's do this. This would be kind of fun. Yeah, let's do this. Okay, that'll be good. Oh, I kind of forgot where I was, but I was kind of ranting about the people who are reading these stories. Like, they got to know that something shouldn't make sense. And I was talking about Texas. Yeah, how do you explain logically the icing conditions, these drastic ice accumulations that have taken out power and knocked down their power systems for days or weeks, and still somehow claim that it's global warming? And of course now, you know, they're just trying to change the verbiage to climate crisis, not warming, not cooling, because of course when the ice age starts in 10 years and all the fears start about the coming ice age, well, we just have to continue to call it climate crisis. I think the best thing you can do, and that's why I do the show that I do, and why I've kind of divided it up to do a homestead portion on Wednesdays and the more kind of current events and some blended in homestead stuff on Saturdays, is because I just want to help people, man, get prepared. The picture you see on the screen right now, we're going to talk about in a little bit. It's fermenting food. And I ran across this a couple weeks ago. I personally like fermented food. There are some great health benefits to it, but I just like the flavor of fermented food. So we're going to talk a little bit about that, because I was thinking, you know, like I have certain things that I encourage people to do because it's easy way to have food available in a short period of time. One thing is to sprout sprouts, you know, get yourself a sprouting kit. Actually, get yourself 3 or 4 sprouting kits so you can have them rotating all the time and sprout sprouts. It's simple and it's nutritious and it's easy. And you could probably even do it with water from, you know, Palestine, Ohio. I'm not recommending that, by the way. But you probably could use the water from Palestine. But if you think about it, this is a great way to, number one, preserve food and extend the shelf life of food. Like if you started one of these jars, I'll get into it in just a little bit, but if you started a jar of food, like one a week, I mean, they'll keep for like 6 months. Of course, you're probably going to eat it pretty quickly. So if you started one a week and you had, I don't know, 24 weeks, let's say, 24 jars of food, if it's just you, I mean, you can guarantee that you're going to have food for 3 months. And you don't have to grow this food yourself. You can go buy this food. You can go, you know, get this food from other sources. You know, I'm going to talk a little bit about kind of in increasing your food security today a little bit too. But I mean, this is why I do what I do, is I want to help people in any way I can. I'm no expert, man. I'm constantly looking for like other information. When I ran across this, I mean, you know, those of you who've listened to the shows this year know that we made our own sauerkraut this year. It was really good. It needed a little more salt. And I know a lot of people are going to freak out, you know, like, oh, salt is bad for you. I don't happen to believe that. And yeah, you can criticize me all you want because I had a heart attack, and, you know, that's fine. I can take it. But it just needed more salt for two reasons. One, it would taste a little bit better. And number two, it would preserve it a little longer, because what happened is we made like this huge batch of sauerkraut. And then some of it went bad because we just didn't have the solutions right. And it's important to get those solutions right. Now, this, I'm going to post a link to this page where they have about 6 recipes that you can do. I'm going to start the carrots. There's a carrot and jalapeno fermentation that looks delicious. I happen to love this recipe. I've eaten this recipe in different places. Sometimes they serve it as what they call a relish in Mexican restaurants, and it's not a relish as many of us think of relish, like you put on your hot dog bun for hot dogs or whatever. It's just pieces of carrot and, you know, jalapenos, either in half or whole, and they're fermented and they taste delicious and they're good for you. So I do want to talk about that a little bit, but my point is, I started off with sprouts. Sprouts is a good way to have fresh, nutritious vegetables. My stupid watch went off. Fresh, nutritious vegetables, always at the ready. It takes 4 to 6 days to grow sprouts. And microgreens would be another way to go. I personally haven't delved into the microgreen like situation and grown my own yet. I've thought about it a few times. I don't know what's held me back. I mean, maybe that we have food going all the time here and we have plenty of room to grow more food. And we're always looking for ways to grow food more efficiently. That's why this hydroponic unit is so interesting, I guess. And I'm really excited to see what it does. Anyway, so just thinking about different ways to get food quickly. Let's say, I mean, I feel sorry for people, and I shouldn't say I feel sorry. I'm concerned for people who live in the city. Because you have very little opportunity to grow food in the city. And yeah, I've seen square foot gardening. I've read their books. It's fantastic. And if you can do it, it's a great way to grow your own food in a very limited space, and you can grow a lot of food. I think what's going to happen, honestly, is there's going to be a food restriction, and people are going to be desperate to get their hands on some food. What that means is people are going to be living on a lot less food than they're used to living on. Like, it's just not going to be available. So if I can pass on some things I've done in my past to, like, ensure that I have a certain kind of nutrition, and yeah, let's face it, I don't need to do this. Well, after I say that, I think, man, why do I feel such an urge to do this? I do feel like I need to do this, but you know what I'm saying? I'm not in a position where I would have to grow my own food yet. It could happen, who knows? But I've been in a position in my life, I mean, a good portion of my life, where, you know, I didn't have a lot of money. I tried to grow food and produce food so that we didn't have to spend so much money on food. And I think with the times that are coming, I mean, look at the, I was watching some articles, a friend of mine sent me these articles on chicken feed, because I'd heard a lot of rumors about chicken feed and how they're doing something to the feed now. And I didn't see exactly what they're doing, but this makes perfect sense. And it's kind of a whole political shell game. And I will get into it probably on the next show. I just want to research it a little bit more and find out exactly what they're doing to the feed. But something happened in the chicken feed before September of last year, where all of a sudden people who have raised chickens for years, literally, people who have produced eggs to supplement their income and their family's food, suddenly their chickens quit producing eggs. And everybody's kind of pointing the finger to one thing or another. You know, the government is saying that your flock has avian flu. Thought a jet was going to crash into the house here. Still might be. It was pretty low. Yeah, so, you know, government officials will show up and they'll, you know, if you have a dead bird, like, don't tell anybody that your bird, a bird died, for God's sakes. I'm not kidding. I mean, now is the time. I really consider this war. I consider this war on the citizens of the planet, because they're trying to, you know, how do you take down your enemy? Well, you cut off their supplies, especially food and water. Now, think about everything that's happened in the past few weeks. I mean, was Palestine, Ohio, or Palestine? I don't know. I've heard it pronounced two different ways. You know, are those just dry runs of, like, how can we poison the water and how is it going to affect people? Or, you know, was it an accident? I'm not buying that it was truly an accident. I'm just not. I'm sorry. Matter of fact, these days, I'm not buying anything anybody says anymore. Nothing. Of course, I'm probably going to repeat some of it today. But my point is, you know, I'll see something on the internet, some of my sources that I depend on, and I read something and I go, that can't possibly be real. Like, that can't possibly be real. Like, how could this train crash into this area that's going to basically poison or toxify the entire Ohio River Valley, and the government does nothing about it? The president flies off to Ukraine to show his support for Ukraine when we have this major disaster right here in the United States that really should garner the attention of, you know, the government officials who are supposed to handle that kind of thing here in the United States. And no, they're just completely ignoring it. Like, you know, the water's fine, the air is fine, we don't know why your skin is peeling off, you know. We don't know how come you're getting rashes, and we don't know how come you're having breathing problems. Well, you had a fire, you know. Probably a little irritation from that smoke. Has nothing to do with the toxins there, I'm sure. But my point is, if this is war, and your enemy is literally and actively restricting your ability to acquire food and water, I mean, that's pretty much the basics of war throughout history. You know, they used to surround a castle and cut off the supplies to the castle. You know, if you had an army big enough, it's like, yep, they'll run out of food in a few months, maybe a year or two. We're just going to hang out here until they do. And that's all you have to do. People get hungry. And they get weak. And then they are more susceptible to disease. How about that? Now that we've mastered the ability to make any disease we want, probably. And we can disperse it at whatever time and whatever rate we want to, and on whatever population we want to, which just happens to be the entire population of the globe. It kind of makes sense. And if this is war, which I believe it is, then you have to be prepared to fight that war. And the way that you have to prepare to fight that war is to make sure that your food supply and water supply is secure. There's no way to make that 100% secure. There's just no way. Because if somebody wants it bad enough, they're going to take it or they're going to destroy it. I mean, how hard would it be to fly an airplane over a certain community and just spray herbicide on the whole community and destroy every plant that isn't a Monsanto plant, right? It wouldn't be hard at all. It would be easy to walk onto your property and say, hey, we've had some avian flu in this area. We'd just like to check a couple of your chickens to make sure they're fine. I'm saying no. Don't let anybody on your property. Not for any reason. Not to check your birds out. Not to check the health of your... They're your birds on your property. It's nobody's business what health status they have. And I'm sure they'll try and tell you anything. Like, well, we have to protect the rest of the birds in the Yamhill County. Well, you go ahead and protect the rest of the birds in the Yamhill County, but you're not coming on here to check mine. You're just not. I don't know what that'll mean, but it's gonna suck when it comes down to it, and if it comes down to it. Fortunately, we don't have that problem yet. The guys I were listening to today were talking about the price of eggs. Again, this is more on the eastern side of the Mississippi than the western side. But basically, the egg prices on the eastern side, I mean, the west is a little bit behind. I'm not sure why, and actually that's not true. In California egg prices kind of mimic the East Coast egg prices. The problem is that there's fewer eggs, which means fewer chickens. The demand is still there for eggs and chickens, so the price is creeping up because people still want eggs and chickens. Of course, the government's goal is for you to quit wanting eggs and chickens and to eat your crickets and your mealworms and whatever else is they're going to throw at you, because it takes so much less carbon to produce crickets and mealworms. And I can't even imagine. Last night, I think it was last night or the night before, Clyde Lewis on Ground Zero was talking about bugs, number one, and actually another disease. I wonder if I close that tab. Let me see. Oh, nope, right here. Xylella fastidiosis. Let's see what it is. It's a xylem-limited bacterium capable of infecting a wide range of host plants, resulting in Pierce's disease and grapevine, citrus, there's a whole list. Olives, peach, plum leaf, alfalfa. It affects so many plants. And where did this thing come from? It was probably created in a lab, more than likely, because they got to take out the vegetables too. But also they were talking about the viruses and the bacterium and the fungi that bugs carry, that when you consume them, when you handle them, so let's say you go into bug production, which believe it or not, I considered in the last 24 months, I thought, well, we could start making mealworms for our chickens. It's not that difficult, but apparently it is pretty stinky. I didn't try it yet. And smells don't really bother me that much anyway. I mean, you live on a farm, you smell all kinds of stuff. Usually it's pretty healthy smelling if you ask me, but I don't know about mealworms, but it is kind of a process. And Rochelle wasn't really crazy about it. And you know what that means. If Rochelle isn't crazy about it, it's probably not going to happen. That's not true. We could make it happen. But the point is, there was no need for it. I mean, maybe there's going to be a need for it. I mean, maybe I am going to see that coming my way again. Mealworms are, you know, you can produce a lot of them quickly. And chickens love mealworms, absolutely love mealworms. So back to the chicken and the egg discussion here. So eggs are going up, chickens are going up. The guy was saying that chickens were selling at the sale house, the warehouse, the wholesale warehouse, the chickens were selling for up to $25, or they thought the price was going to go up to $25 per chicken. Who's going to be able to afford chicken that costs $25 for a chicken? Now that was the producers, the chickens that you would buy to produce more chickens. Not just eggs is what I'm trying to say. Yeah, and pigs too. And the whole idea here is they're trying to centralize that meat production. Why? Why would they centralize the meat production? So they could cut it off. So they could just eliminate it and, you know, you'll be eating bugs and mushrooms and vegetables. That's what you'll be eating. GMO vegetables, by the way, because, you know, we can save so much more money on fertilizer and fuel and all that by just making the plants so screwed up by adding genes to them that, you know, number one, they'll make you sicker than hell throughout your lifetime, chronic diseases. But number two, I mean, they'll grow pretty much in any climate and with any, you know, with no weeds around, because, of course, we can kill off the weeds with some other poisons we can dump on there. You know, and you'll like it because that's what you get. No meat for you, which is, you know, a good argument for kind of putting yourself in a position to either be friendly with people who produce meat, volunteer on a farm that produces meat or a ranch that produces meat, to hook up with some of your friends who have little hobby farms and they might have some excess meat. And you can either do some work for some meat, or black flies larva for feed. Oh, yeah, I don't think so, buddy. Have all you want. I bet they taste delicious roasted with some garlic, I'm sure. But no, I'm not interested in eating bugs. I'm a meat eater. You know, and I got to say, honestly, just diverging a tiny bit here. One thing about being a dentist is you understand what these teeth are made for. Yeah, they're made for crunching some grains and, you know, chewing some fiber. They're made for eating meat. That's it. They're made for eating meat. We used to have canines that were big canines, so we could hold our prey still while we plucked off its flesh and ate it. Oh, also to feed chickens. Oh, thank you. Oh, okay. sorry. The black flies are apparently used to feed fish, not you, and also to feed your chickens. Okay, I'd be interested in that. Maybe, but flies, man, yuck. Number one, Rochelle hates flies. I'm not kidding. I'm just waiting like 5 more weeks. I'm not kidding. It'll be on because one fly gets in the house. And, you know, this is kind of unusual for a homestead because people on homesteads get used to bugs like flies. Right now, stink bugs or box elders is kind of an issue. I'm looking over my monitor at the news, and Interstate 5 in Portland is stopped. Like, there's so much flipping snow, the cars aren't even moving. Okay, little diversion. Okay, so, so flies are, I can almost guarantee you, that is not going to be a goal on the homestead unless we get so desperate that we have to start growing flies for, you know, chicken feed. I think we'll be okay, though. I really think we will, and I think mealworms would be a little bit higher on the list than, you know, black flies, black fly larva or whatever it was. What was it? Black fly larva for feed. Yeah, if you could get them, you know, while they're larva, I guess that wouldn't be too hard to do because you can just stunt their growth by putting them in the freezer, right? And then freeze drying them or something. That would be okay. Okay, back to wherever the hell I was. Where was I? Oh, yeah. Chickens and eggs. So the one thing that we're going to do here on the homestead, we already started this a few months ago. I think you guys remember in February, March, we bought the extra chickens that we're going to crossbreed to make meat chickens. But now we're going to buy actually a better kind of commercial grade incubator that does everything, so we don't have to do anything except collect the chicks when they're done and raise them. And start doing that. Because, I mean, because there's a fight on, man. And people are going to be looking for meat. And people are going to be looking for eggs. And you're not going to be able to trust these chickens that you're going to be getting from these big suppliers. Because they're probably screwing with them. I'm not going to name any of the suppliers because I don't know if they truly are. But, you know, if the suppliers are the ones who are in charge of making the feed, and they're the ones in charge of these huge chicken production facilities, they don't want any competition from you. And if the government or whoever the enemy is at this point doesn't want you producing food, why would they sell you an animal that would reproduce food? Why wouldn't they sell you one that's less productive, that's not going to produce so many offspring, that's not going to generate a lot of protein and therefore a lot of, you know, need for, you know, fuel and fertilizer and food and stuff like that, when they can just raise them in these giant, you know, feedlots with GMO food and lower the price? By the way, looking back on the whole fight for cage-free chickens, doesn't it kind of make you wonder now? Like, I was thinking about this today. I was like, you know, that was a brilliant move. That was really a brilliant move. Is what they did is they had all the little PETA people, you know, say, you can't have your chickens in a little tiny cage because they're not happy. Freaking chickens. Who, that whole idea, man, that we put this, that we put these emotions on animals that the animals don't really have, you know, like fish, you know, like fish being smart enough to avoid your hook. No, they're not. They eat food. If you put food in front of them and they're hungry, they're going to eat it whether it has a hook in it or not. Chickens didn't care if they were in a cage with no room to move. People cared. The chickens, they didn't care. They just like sat there in their little cage all snug as a bug in a rug. They're getting fed constantly, probably stuff that's not good for them. And they're getting water constantly, and they drop an egg, and somebody else is taking that egg away and raising it, so they didn't even have to practice their parental, exercises. They just like dump the kid off in a trough, off it goes to the adoption center. I was going to say, or the abortion clinic. That was horrible. So the chickens really didn't care. They don't care. But wasn't that a genius idea to get those chickens out of the cages and force, like California said, we're no longer having any caged chickens in this state. So then the chickens became free range, which meant they got to go outside and they got to go out in the environment where, guess what? You could dust them with avian flu and you could infect the entire flock and take out millions of birds, hundreds of thousands of birds, because we got them out of those little tiny cages in those big giant warehouses because they were too protected in there. It's an argument that makes such perfect sense, and we have to be on guard for those kind of arguments. If you're into your own food production, if you're into self-sufficiency, you got to watch out for these things. And don't fall for it. God, California. But that makes perfect sense. Yeah, someday they'll come. That's right. Why would they stop at whatever it is that you can still raise to feed yourself? If they want total control, if this is war, they won't stop until they control all of the food and water that you depend on to eat. With whatever guise that they can come up with. Look how hard it is now to tell reality from fantasy anymore. Like the Joe Rogan thing, I think I talked about on the current event show, the Discerning Observer. So somebody made a commercial and it looked like Joe Rogan was actually promoting this, supplement of some kind. But the entire commercial was fake. The dialogue was fake. The voices were fake. I think the imagery was faked also, although I'm not 100% sure about that. But if you were just watching it, and kind of like you do most stuff where you kind of half-ass watch something and listen, you'd have never guessed that that whole entire ad was faked. I don't know if I talked about this the other day, but did you see there's a clip of Madison Square Garden with some killer whales and some dolphins swimming inside the garden, but they're not real, but they look very real. And they're just floating through the air there, swimming around in Madison Square Garden. And how far are we from not being able to tell the difference between what's real and what's fake? I do fear that the governments of the world are just evil and ugly and nasty enough to actually fake people believing that they're under attack of some kind, whether it's UFO, whether it's from a foreign country, whether it's from, from within. Hell, maybe we fell for it already in 9/11, right? There's a lot of controversy about that. And thank God, by the way, thank God that we have Rumble and BitChute and other sources to be able to say something like that and not get our stuff pulled. YouTube, man. I listen to some of the people, content creators that I absolutely adore because of what they do, and I watch them walk this fine, fine line, man, that they're so afraid to say that thing that they want to say because they're going to get strikes and they're going to lose. I don't even know what you call it. They're going to lose. They're going to get a strike and then they're going to be not funded. What do they call that? monetized. They're going to lose their monetization, right? And they're so worried about losing. Thank God I'm not making anybody doing this. Or thank God I'm not making money that I depend on to feed my family or anything like that. Because, man, I would have to watch what I say too. I don't watch what I say, except I try, believe it or not, I try not to cuss because I don't need to. And I don't want to turn anybody off. I don't want to lose. Sometimes, you know, you just really want to let that F word out or the S word because it would just be so potent right at that moment. But really, I try not to, so anybody can listen to my show and hopefully not be offended. But, I mean, back to it. You know, thank God I don't have to worry about, you know, having my... Well, actually, I know that some of my podcasts get taken down because I try and put them up on all the platforms. And I know that they don't necessarily put my shows up on these other platforms because when I look at my daily downloads from Buzzsprout, which is where my podcast, that means the audio portion only, is served up from Buzzsprout to like 12 or 15 other, you know, podcast providers. So all those podcast providers go to Buzzsprout, get my show, and they put it on their system. But I can see how many of them don't. And if I go to those systems and look for my podcast, I'll see like a few shows and like a lot of my shows don't get on. That's fine. That's fine with me. Buzzsprout and Rumble, maybe Odyssey, I don't know, but not Buzzsprout, BitChute is 100%, they've never taken any of my shows off. Rumble, never taken any of my shows off. Odyssey, as far as I know, has never taken any of my shows off. You know, Google, yep, definitely. Apple, hell, I think... Honest to God, I think Apple actually doesn't even download. They probably have stricken me. And because I don't actually have an Apple, what do you call it, iTunes account? Well, except for the one I had to sign up with. But I never post anything there. Like, I don't get notification. Hey, we took down your podcast because, you know, misinformation. Or, you know, questionable health advice or whatever. I don't ever get any notification, but I can tell how many times they've downloaded my stuff, and I think they've kind of given up downloading my stuff. They're just like, no, he's too radical for that. Oh my gosh, the time is cruising by. And I was just thinking something. Oh yeah, we may not get to this fermenting food thing today. Yeah, I think we will. But I wanted to talk about two other things that I thought about this week that kind of have to do with homestead and kind of, yeah, okay, so I wanted to talk about this. So, you know, like so many of us have been like awake because we know that the jab is bad for you. Like, it doesn't work, right? And so many of us have been talking about this for 2 years. Like, yeah, it doesn't work. It doesn't protect you from getting infected. It doesn't keep you from spreading the virus. It doesn't keep you from having a shorter hospital stay. It doesn't shorten the length of the disease, all that stuff. And then I started thinking today, okay, but really, that is big pharma, right? If you think of every single drug on the market that they push every single day, I don't know, 60 to 80% of commercial support for regular everyday programs, especially during prime time, are pharmaceuticals. And what are they selling you? They're selling you drugs that don't actually cure anything. They sell only drugs that prolong your ability to continue to buy that drug. So why would we think that the jab is any different? And it's not. The funny thing is, it's just become so blatantly obvious now that the pharmaceutical companies are like, we're just going to put this out there for everybody to see that it's complete BS, and they're not going to be able to do a damn thing about it because we've been doing it for so long. This is actually our common practice, is to make pharmaceuticals that doesn't make anybody healthier, that doesn't actually heal anybody, that isn't probably even effective, and actually the side effects are much worse than the disease you had in the first place. I mean, hello, the COVID jab, day by day, week by week, man, I see more and more research come out that it's ineffective, that it's harmful, that the damage that it's doing is far greater than any possible benefit you can gain from it. But it's just to the point now where the pharmaceutical companies are like, yeah, so what? Good luck. Good luck. We've been doing it for so long, we can just tell you straight up, take this. We're going to force it on you. The government's going to buy it. They're going to pay us a ton of money. 6 months later, we're going to say, yeah, it kills people. Oh, and yeah, it doesn't really do what we said it's going to do. And who cares? We already made the money. Warfare. It's warfare, for sure. Let's talk about this fermenting stuff. I'll get off my high horse for a minute. So this, in this article, well, let's go back to the browser only. Oh, no, I might sneeze. So this is a Fermentation 101, a beginner's guide to fermenting vegetables at home. And it says everything you need to know to make your own sauerkraut, pickles, and more fermented favorites. Now, you can read through this. I'm just going to tell you, there's a few things that are really good about fermented food. One thing is, it has something to do with the pH of your body and kind of keeping your body in a certain state. Number two is, it provides some probiotics for your gut, like the fermentation process actually creates certain probiotics that are good for you. And so you can do yogurt, or you could do, you know, some cheeses, or you can do some vegetables that are fermented. What I was saying earlier, so this is what I'm going to do. I'm just going to move you down to the, on the screen. I don't care if you look at it or not. Doesn't that look good? Carrots and jalapeno. I am dying to get this going. So Friday, that's probably my goal. So this is carrot pickles, and it's, listen, it's not much. Thyme, black pepper. Give these fermented carrots a pleasant herbal aroma, while a single jalapeno and plenty of garlic give it a kick. I love that. Like most fermented vegetable recipes, this one is super simple to make. 6 medium carrots, 1 jalapeno, 4 medium garlic cloves, 6 fresh thyme sprigs, 1 teaspoon of black peppercorns, 2 cups of room temperature water, 1 tablespoon of fine salt. Now, the secret is here is you got to put these vegetables in your brine, or whatever you want to call that, in your liquid. And then you have to put a weight on top of it to keep the vegetables from touching air. So they have to remain totally submerged while they're fermenting, or you'll get mold on top and or mildew or fungus or whatever, and it'll ruin it. So there's a little trick to putting this together. But they sell, I mean, if you use mason jars, which are kind of the most common canning jar in the entire known universe, as far as I'm told, that's probably not true. But if you use mason jars, they make these weighted glass weights that fit their perfect size. Well, actually, that's an exaggeration. They're a good size for, like, you can order large mouth mason jar glass weights, or I guess the regular mouth, you know, weights. I think they could have made them a little bit, like a little less room around these glass weights. But, I mean, they're pretty good. It's not too bad, really. And we'll see how it works. I think with carrots, it's going to work fine because you're going to use, you know, carrot sticks. And there's not enough room for a carrot stick to sneak up alongside this glass weight. And plus, if you pack them in there just right, you know, like not too tightly packed, but just tightly packed enough that they're not going to float around, I think that's probably going to be fine. But so, like I was saying earlier, these are going to keep for up to 6 months, I think this said somewhere down below. Yeah, so then transfer them to the refrigerator where they'll keep for up to 6 months. Now, you're not going to eat on a jar of carrots for 6 months. I mean, it's, you know, I'm going to say hope to God that you don't have to only eat fermented carrots for some period of time. But, I mean, if you had to survive, this is a great supplement, you know, a great way to store food for a short period of time. And you, if you, like I said, if you do one a week, you know, and then you pick at it, you know, during the week, and maybe you won't even eat a whole jar a week. I think you will. I think if you develop a taste for it, you know, it's fermented food. I mean, if you don't like sauerkraut, maybe you're not going to like other fermented food. I think they're fantastic. I've actually had these before, and they taste delicious, and they still have they still maintain a bit of a crunch to them, which is really nice because they're not like slimy or squishy. They're actually, oh my gosh, oh kimchi, man, I love kimchi. I know a lot of people can't stand it. It's fermented Napa cabbage, I think, but it's spicy. Oh, you made my mouth water literally mentioning that. Thanks so much. But anyway, so you can, you know, produce some of this. It'll last 6 months. You know, so if you made a jar every 2 weeks, you know, you're going to spread that out over time. And I mean, just think about it. So if, you know, if the food train blows up and you can't get food for a month, you'll have food. Like you'll have food literally sitting there ready to go. Like one less worry. You know, and even if you don't like it, it's food. It's going to keep you alive. Just like sprouts, man. Get yourself some sprouting kits. I'm not kidding. Get yourself some sprouting kits and get like a pound of seeds just to get started. And learn to sprout and eat them like salad or eat them like snacks. Find one that you like. A friend of mine grows microgreens, and she likes the sunflower. And that's one thing, I still haven't tried it, man, and I really want to try it. Last year we actually took the sunflower, the entire sunflower, and roasted it and ate it while it's young. You don't want the seeds to get too big, but god dang, that was delicious. Hey, thanks, Vinny. You take it easy. I'll catch up with you soon. And don't worry about whatever that was, Bozcast. We'll pay it before it expires. Unless you already did it, but we'll talk about that later. Anyway, so yeah, sprouts, fermented food are two solid ways that you can keep some food going. One is fresh, nutritious food. The seeds are fantastic. You can get alfalfa. You can get broccoli, cabbage. Radish is one of my favorites, but you can't do radish by itself. I'm telling you, it's too spicy as a little tiny germinated sprout. Simple ways to have food that you can produce pretty much anywhere. I mean, you could literally take a sprouter and your seeds with you and sprout them wherever you're going, like however you're moving along, or if you have to move along, or if your house gets blown up or what. Oh, it's time to go. You guys can catch me again Saturday at 9 p.m. Eastern. Don't forget, Hal and Behind the Woodshed every Sunday, 3 p.m. Eastern, and you're gonna hear again right on the Left Coast Radio here the Ravenwood Homestead Podcast every Wednesday at 9 p.m. Thanks for joining me. We'll catch you guys next time.